because of the fact that the Atlantic Coast Conference could end up with potentially three undefeated teams in SMU, Miami, and Clemson. During the break, we went and looked up the ACC's tie break policy. And granted, it's not going to get there because there's six before you get to the last spot. But as somebody who is a massive fan of chaos in college football, I am absolutely team chaos. Could you imagine, though, what the outcry would be as tiebreaker number seven in both the two-team tie and multi-team tie playoff tiebreaker or conference championship tiebreaker scenario is a random draw? Could you imagine a team going undefeated and not going to play for a conference title because the conference commish comes out and goes, ping, heads, yeah, but Miami's
see,
in.
See, they would have said coin toss. They said random draw. So, I mean, how does that work? Do they put the names in a hat? Do they have a hopper with only three balls in it?
One of those spinning lottery cages?
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about, a hopper, one of those. And only three balls in it, and the first two they pull out, that's who plays? I mean, what is this random draw? Or do they go, who is the biggest draw as far as money goes? Yeah, we're going to go with them. It's kind of random, I suppose.
All I'm saying is I absolutely want there to be I want college football fans of three schools to have to tune in at 7 p.m. on a Sunday night to the ACC's lottery draw for the evening. I want to see the commish up there with a spinning lottery cage reaching in and drawing out two out of three. I want it to be like Royal Rumble number selection process to see who goes to play for a conference title game and a chance to go to the college football playoffs and have a bye in the process and see the fan base that gets left out.
And have the quad box going. So in one box you got the commissioner with the balls. And then the other three you have the possible teams that could be picked. So we can see the look of disappointment when that second one is drawn.
Dude,
to suddenly focus in on that team. That would be drama.
I mean, the height of it, dude. It would be hilarious. All right, 7:03 in the morning, ladies and gentlemen, you've got less than an hour until you got to get clocked in and locked in at the office. And we all know what the real goal here is. We all know what you want to do. You want to work like, let's say, 7 to 11 minutes. And then you're going to walk down the hallway and you're going to go stand by the water cooler and you're going to talk sports with your friends, with your family, with your coworkers, whoever it is that you spend your workday with. Well, if that is the case, ladies and gentlemen, and we know that it is, you got to know what's going on in the world of sports. If you got to know what's going on in the world of sports, you're in luck. Because Lonzo and I, we do this. I'm not going to play with it anymore.
Yes, stop it.
Water cooler cheat sheet, top three sports stories you need to know before you get to the office this lovely upstate Thursday morning and start talking sports with your friends, your family, your coworkers. When you do, this is what you need to know. Let's dive right in with item number one. We have item number one and item number one, subsection 1A. We start with item number one. 80-77 is your finish last night. The New York Liberty knock off the Minnesota Lynx in the WNBA Finals. Game number three, and that gives the Liberty not just the 2-1 lead with one more to play in Minnesota on the road. It also moves them one step closer to claiming the WNBA championship for what has been a highly productive, highly successful, and very lucrative 2023 season for the W. Sabrina Ionescu knocks down a nasty three from about 6 feet behind the arc with 1 second left to play that gave the Liberty a three-point advantage that they would hang on to and take home the W. Once again, Brianna Stewart is a monster. 30 points, 11 boards last night for B. Stu. Ionescu ended up with 13, 5 boards, and 6 assists on the evening as well. The Liberty got just 9 points off of the bench last night. But with the night Brianna Stewart had and with the night Sabrina Ionescu had, they didn't need much more. Nafisa Collier, once again, leading the link. She had 22 points for the five starters for Minnesota in double digits. The big issue they had was only one starter, and that was Alana Smith, who had just a deuce on the night. You're not going to win. You're not going to win like that in the dub. It's not going to happen. The Lynx now on the brink of elimination after the Liberty in their house go up 2-1. The next game in the series is tomorrow night, with the Liberty having the opportunity to either put it away or to end up going back to New York in a game five, an elimination game five, to try to win this thing in front of their home crowd. We'll keep an eye on that. Item 1A in the water cooler cheat sheet, item number one. Speaking of Caitlin Clark, Indiana Fever guard Caitlin Clark became the league's first rookie since Candace Parker back in 2008 to be named to the All-WNBA first team. Nafisa Collier of the Lynx, Asia Wilson of the Aces were unanimous selections. Brianna Stewart and Alyssa Thomas from the Liberty and the Sun, respectively, were also first-team selections. Clark was this year's Rookie of the Year. She earned 52 first-team votes and was on 66 of the 67 ballots submitted by a national media panel. I don't do this very often. Make that one guy's vote public. Seriously, I want to know exactly who it was that decided that the season Caitlin Clark had was not justifiable to be a first-team All-WNBAer. The only thing I can imagine is that is some Chicago fan somewhere that is still all hurt that Caitlin Clark just, I'm sorry. Angel Reese had a good rookie year, but Caitlin Clark clearly was better. I mean, just clearly was better. And that's not a bad thing. She was better than just about everybody in this league. I don't call for it very often because, you know, sports like art, subjective. And what you think makes a great baller may not be what I think makes a great baller. But if you don't put Caitlin Clark first team all WNBA, you should have your ballot removed. You shouldn't be allowed to vote anymore. That's pathetic. All right, let's get to item number two. That's my bad. I jumped the gun on that. I got to give the build up. I got to build the anticipation.
It's not your fault. I should be on. Anyway, thank you for pointing out that I messed up, though. Most people.
No, you didn't. Noticed. I did. I'm taking credit for it or blame. 8-0 last night. The LA Dodgers knock off the New York Mets. They now hold a 2-1 series lead in the best of seven NLCS. Walker Buehler on the bump. Four innings pitch, gave up three hits, zero runs at all. Cade six in 90 pitches across those four innings. He turned the ball over to Kopech, Brazier, Trannan, and Kasparius, who went the distance, pitched the final five, and surrendered just one more hit. The Mets just four leather on lumbers last night. It was not a good night from the dish for the New York Mets. The Aces and the staff for the Dodgers were absolutely dealing last night. Luis Severino got the start for the Mets. He ate the L after 4.2 innings of three-hit ball, did surrender two runs. Neither of them earned, though. I really don't know why it was that Severino got tagged with the L. He was down 2-0. I guess it's because he gave up the two, but then I turn around. Garrett gave up another two, and Tyler McGill gave up four earned runs in his back three. So any chance that the Mets might have found to try to climb into this thing went night-night once the ball got handed over to the middle reliever and the closer. Listen, it's real, real simple. The Dodgers are a better baseball team right now. With all due respect to the Mets, I will tell you, even as somebody who despises the New York, despises, not like dislikes, like despises the Mets, I would be lying to you to tell you that I have not found the New York Mets to be a very compelling follow this baseball postseason. It has been a fun team to watch. You know, I'm a pro wrestling fan. That may come to the surprise of some of you. Big pro wrestling fan. One of the things I have very much enjoyed about the New York Mets are a team that embraces the babyface role, they embrace the heel role. They have gimmick changes. We've gone from Grimace to the multiple songs that they've released to the OMG Mets. We've gone from their players like Francisco Lindor openly talking crap to their opponents. And listen, when you embrace the heel role, one of the things that you have to understand comes with that is people are going to celebrate your demise, right? We all watch wrestling to watch the bad guy get punched in the face sometimes. And that's part of where you are if you're the Mets. But it also allows you to go above and beyond in order to dig out the W. And now they will have to, as not only are the Dodgers up 2-1 in this series, but they're up 1-2-1 in the series, and they're hitting the ball. Three dingers last night. Enrique Hernandez had one. Max Muncy had one. Shohei Ohtani. Have you heard of Shohei Ohtani? You guys heard about this guy? He's pretty good. Pretty good. Pretty good baseball player. Shohei Ohtani had one last night in the eighth inning that pretty much went ahead and closed the coffin on the New York baseball Mets. So 2-1 is that series now coming up this evening on a Thursday night. Both the AL and NLCS are underway. New York is at Cleveland. First pitch at 5:08. The Dodgers are going up against the New York Mets, looking to push them to the brink of elimination tonight. That is an 8:08 first pick. First pitch, Yoshinobu Yamamoto will be up against Jose Quintana in that second game. New York and Cleveland will have Clark Schmidt and Matthew Boyd on the bump tonight. The Yankees and the Dodgers, both light favorites to continue their runs right now. New York up 2-0. They can push the Cleveland Guardians into a 3-0 elimination hole. The same can be done by the Dodgers against the Mets before they head back to Los Angeles. Let's go to, very quickly, item number three. If Jenny Mauk and Sidney Crosby is the Pittsburgh Pirates last night, get a 6-5 come-from-behind victory. They were down 3-0 early in this game. They ended up knocking off the Buffalo Sabres 6-5 in overtime. Buffalo does get a point out of it. Pittsburgh gets a pair, but it was the history that was made by those two players, Mauk and Crosby, that is the story. Evgeny Malkin became the 48th player in NHL history to score 500 career goals last night. But Sidney Crosby, even more impressive somehow. Sidney Crosby became just the 10th player in NHL history with 1,600 regular season points. Crosby scored his 500th NHL goal back in 2022. It was Malkin who provided the assist last night. When Malkin got number 500, it was Crosby who provided the dish at 3:26 of the third period last night. Crosby sent a between the legs pass from behind the net in front to Malkin, who was sitting on the ice when he flipped the puck past the goalkeeper. The bench emptied to congratulate Malkin. The crowd gave him a well-deserved standing ovation. Malkin has the third most goals in Penguins history. In 1,150 games, he is the 20th player in NHL history to score 500 goals with one team. The Penguins selected the 38-year-old back number two overall in 2004, and he has teamed with Crosby to bring three Stanley Cup championships to Pittsburgh. On the flip side, Sidney Crosby, with his points last night, became the first player at 37 years old since 2011 to reach the 1600 point milestone. He is the first player to do it since Jaromir Jagr did it back in 2011. Crosby took 1,277 games to reach 1600 points, the fifth fewest to reach the milestone. In his 20th NHL season, Crosby is now 7 goals shy of reaching 600 on the career, and he's 39 points short of tying Hall of Famer Joe Sakic for 9th place in NHL history. He has been with the Penguins since 2005 when he was selected number one overall. I'd say they got the money's worth there. 121 points behind Hall of Famer and Penguins legend Mario Lemieux for 8th place in league history. Lemieux's 1,723 points is also the Pittsburgh franchise record. What a night last night to be a Pittsburgh Penguins fan. Texas said, fun fact, I'm a Dodgers and Laker fan. Long story, since we are on baseball, weird side question. I know he got let go from ESPN, but where is Max Kellerman now? That's from UNC Chris. I saw Kellerman not too. I know he's still, I believe he is still doing, I believe he's still doing boxing on, is it HBO? I think he's on HBO. But that's a good question. That's a good question. I like Max Kellerman a lot. I'm a fan of Max Kellerman. Let go from ESPN last year. I don't know where he is, to be honest with you. I think he's still doing boxing in some places, but that's a great question, Chris. Don't know the answer. I'll see if I can find it. All right, let's take a break. When we come back here in just a minute, we got to start turning our attention towards the weekend upcoming, and there is one game that jumps off the schedule coming up this weekend, Texas and Georgia.
By the way, real quick, Max Kellerman is not doing anything, but as of 5 days, it's been announced that he has something coming up really soon.
Oh, okay. So. All right. I thought he was still doing boxing. Guess not. Guess not. There you go. There you go, Chris. We're just out here to answer your questions and make your life better. You're very welcome. Texas and Georgia is a game that is absolutely going to have season-long ramifications. So how's this game play out? What's this game look like? Let's break this one down. We got Lulu Kessin coming up at 8 o'clock to talk Gamecock football. Rashad Beard at 8:40 to talk Carolina Panthers. Hayden Asmario, 9 o'clock to talk NFL and Fight Club at 9:20. All coming up on the Rob Brown Show on the Fan Upstate.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Lulu Kessin of the Greenville News joins us coming up in a little less than 40 minutes to talk a little bit about the Gamecocks trip out there to Norman, Oklahoma to take on the Boomer Sooners, led by former Clemson defensive coordinator turned head coach Brent Venables. Interested in that one. And, of course, Clemson getting set up for Virginia this weekend. Good opportunity here for Clemson to kind of continue to expand, continue to open up the offense. We'll talk more about both of those games as the show rolls on. But I do want to get to something else here. I want to get to Georgia and Texas coming up because listen, this game is very, very interesting. This game is interesting because it could be the end of Georgia's chances. I think Georgia can still very much find their way in, but they do have to win out at this point. The best loss they have, well, the only loss they have, but what would be the best loss that they have in Alabama, the tie did them no favors losing to Vanderbilt. What is happening to me today? Who am I? What have I done with the real Rob?
If you would like, I could speak for a moment. You could sit back, take a deep breath. No, that's an exhale. You have to breathe in. That's what you got to do.
I'm not going to do it. Mainly because I couldn't find it in time to make it funny.
And I have it turned down.
That's also true.
Should I turn it back up?
No, we're good.
Okay.
So this is this game matters a lot because Georgia is still very much alive. There is some problems, obviously, with that loss as the road to the SEC title game did get a little bit more difficult. But the path is still there and available for Georgia. So let's take a look at some of the numbers in this game. You guys know I'm a stat dork. What do you want? Georgia this season averaging 33.5 points per game, 452 yards of total offense so far. That is good for 35th and 25th nationally. Texas is ranking 7th nationally in both. Texas averaging 43.2 points per game. That is 7th. Texas averaging 495.7 yards per game. And keep in mind, they had to go two full games without Quinn Ewers out with an injury. They had to go two full games with Arch Manning as their starting QB, meaning that they are 7th in the country offensively with multiple games with a backup. Granted, good backup, but a backup. Since 2023, Georgia averaging 39.2 points per game against ranked opponents, allowing 17.4. Texas averaging 36.2 points per game and allowing an average of 24.6. So against ranked opponents since last season, Georgia's been better. Both teams have played 7 ranked opponents since those numbers started being compiled. Georgia's defense allowing 17.2 points per game, good for 20th in the country. Texas 312.5, 28th in the country, all right, listen. I am fighting for my life right now. I don't know why. We're going to get it together, people. All right? Little adversity, tap the sign, play like a champion.
All right, I think a lot of this is you thinking people are noticing things that they're probably not.
No, I think it is when I read one team's numbers and attribute them to the other team, I screwed up. And, would anybody have known that? Maybe, but I did. And I won't stand for it, all right? I won't stand for it. We're out here trying to win trophies, not participation awards, all right? Let me try that again. Georgia's defense allowing an average of 17.2 points per game. That is 20th in the country. 312.5 yards per game. That is 28th in the country. Texas's defense allowing 6.3 points per game. They are not giving up a tutty a game, and they are giving away 229.7 yards per game. That is also first in the country. We can spend all the time that we want talking about Quinn Ewers, Steve Sarkisian, yada, yada, yada. What we need to be talking about here, and granted, and I think this is where people are going to get a little bit flustered. Texas hasn't exactly played a who's who on the schedule. They beat Colorado State 52-0. They beat Michigan 31-12, but as I told you back then, and it's been proven correct, Michigan ain't that good. They've lost everything that made them special. They're not that good. They play UTSA 56-7, UL Monroe 51-3, Mississippi State, again, that's a tragic football team right now. They beat them 35-13. And then Oklahoma, which is obviously the best win. 34-3 was the final there. I'm sorry. I said it preseason about this team as well. I don't believe in Oklahoma either.
Yeah, but they've got the toughest team in all of the SEC to play this week.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. For sure. This is part of the reason.
Oh, it's next week. I think they have a bye. So you're saying they can't beat that Vanderbilt won't compete against them? Or am I looking at the wrong schedule?
Yeah,
talking about Texas.
Yeah, Texas, South Carolina. Oh, no. Texas, Georgia's this weekend.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Texas, Georgia's this weekend.
I think Vanderbilt might be scarier right now
than Georgia.
Yes.
No.
Yeah. I think Vanderbilt might be scarier.
No. No. Vanderbilt.
You know why Vanderbilt is scarier, and this is why a couple of teams have fallen to Vanderbilt so far, because it's hard to get past the mentality of that's Vanderbilt, and think if Texas has a hard fought victory against Georgia and goes into Vanderbilt thinking it's a day off, they could very easily be dethroned.
I mean, I don't disagree. Considering what Vanderbilt has done so far with but I also want to point out, and you know me, I'm a big doors guy right now. Diego is my dog. Big fan. I don't think anybody's sleeping on Vandy anymore. All right? Clark Lee's put that team on the map. But Texas has to get by Georgia first before the Vanderbilt game matters as much. Texas has got to get by Georgia. Here's my thing. I actually, and I've gone back and forth. I was on BetMGM tonight on Tuesday. We talked about this game with Brad and Ryan. There's a little bit of me, and I may end up being in a spot, and this may shock you. I do this a couple of times a year, where I'm overthinking this a little bit, where I might maybe, because every number says Texas wins this game. Every number. Offense, numbers say Texas wins the game. Defense, numbers say Texas win the game. Quarterback comparison, head-to-head, numbers say Texas wins the game. And Lonzo can attest, I was saying preseason, I don't believe in Carson Beck the way that a lot of the national folks do. I think Carson Beck's fine. I think he's fine. I don't think he's a guy that I necessarily trust when the light's the brightest. And I go back to that Alabama game, and everybody says, oh, look at the come-from-behind victory, right, or near victory for Georgia. Carson Beck organized that as the quarterback. I don't disagree with that at all. Why were they in a 28-0 hole in the first place, or 28-7 or whatever it was? Why were they in that hole in the first place? It's because when Alabama took to the field defensively, they ran a bunch of different looks at Carson Beck. And Carson Beck did not respond well to them. Now, they went in the locker room. They tinkered. They tooled. They messed around with the offense. They changed a couple of things that they were doing offensively. And in the second half, Georgia's coach, in my opinion, in the second half, Georgia's coaching staff, by utilizing some different motion sets, by utilizing a couple of different formations Bama hadn't seen yet, they were able to expose, in my opinion, they were able to expose the primary weakness of the Alabama Crimson Tide. That's a weak defensive backfield. And a defensive backfield that mentally just ain't there yet. And Georgia took full advantage of that in order to climb back in that game. But the problem with that is Texas is better than that defensively. Texas is better. Now, I will say, the reason I brought up their Schetti a second ago was because of a conversation that I had with Ryan and Brad on Tuesday night. I think there is some element of Georgia's been tested once, and it was by Oklahoma, and they answered the bell. They answered the bell. There were also a couple of tough breaks for the Boomer Sooners in that game. There was like a fumble going into the war, coming out, or I don't remember. There was a fumble somewhere that Texas was able to take advantage of. There were a couple of spots where the ball just bounced the Longhorns' way. And again, I know the old expression, the ball bounces your way when you put in the prep work to earn it. Like, sure. But, you know, it is what it is. I think there's a little bit of an inflated opinion on Texas. I think they're very good. Let me be very clear. I do think they're a very good football team. They're 2-0 in conference. They're 6-0 overall. I think they're a very good football team. I also think that the two opponents that a lot of people are trying to use as the example of why you can trust that Texas is a very good team as opposed to just a pretty good team, I don't trust Mississippi State. And I think Oklahoma's overrated. I said that one preseason. I think they're a good team, but a lot of their talent bounced. And with all due respect, Brent Venables seems like a good head coach, but the offense of that team is just, it's just lost right now. So I don't think Texas has had anywhere near the challenge they're about to get out of Georgia, but Georgia has. Georgia's had that game where they've gotten punched in the face by a very good team. They lost it, but they've had that challenge. They've learned that lessons. So there's a part of me. There's a part of me that wants to pick Georgia outright in this game. This is the I don't trust Carson Beck, but I don't need to. I don't need to. I think they can run the ball. I think they can throw a couple of new looks at Texas to make it easier on Carson Beck. And I think Texas is a bit overhyped based on who they've played. I could be totally wrong.
Now you got time to decide. We've got a couple of days.
Sure do. Hey, you know who we're going to talk to about this game on Monday? Coming up on Monday, 8 a.m., Marty Smith going to join us here on the show. ESPN, Marty McGee host. Marty Smith going to join us at 8 a.m. on Monday. He's got a cool little project he's working on. Also going to talk some college football with us. Maybe we even ask him a NASCAR question or two. That's Monday morning. Lulu Kessin coming up in 25 minutes here on the Rob Brown Show on the Fan Upstate. Got Lulu Kessin from the Greenville News coming up in the next segment. 840, Rashad Beard of the Panther Nation podcast will join us here on the show to talk a little Carolina Panther football. 9 o'clock, Hayton S. Mario from the BetQL Network joins us to talk NFL. Perhaps we dabble ever so briefly in the world of the NBA as well. And then at 9:20, Fight Club with the great Milanzo, where we go around the world of combat sports. The only show in the upstate that talks combat sports. That's at 9:20 when we do Fight Club, all of that and more coming up on the show. Let me ask you guys this. I was flipping around last night. I was at the house. The internet's finally back. Yeah. Oh God, so good. So good. So good. Flipping around the sports world yesterday evening. I hung a bar shelf in the house. We got like a full like wall bar now. It's very, very nice. And then I sat my behind down.
What makes it a bar shelf?
I put liquor on it.
Okay, so it's just a shelf that you put. Okay,
right. I mean it's designed to be a bar in that it has multiple levels of different heights. So it's like one shelf, all my mixers are up there. One shelf just for my whiskey and my bourbon. One shelf just for the ladies' booze, like her flavored vodkas. Well,
I didn't
and all
know
that.
If it was called. Is it called a bar shelf?
I think it's a bar shelf. It is if it is a shelf used as a bar. Could I use it for other things? Yeah, it actually would make a super nice bookshelf.
It sounds like you could put action figures over here. You could put statues over there.
I could. I could.
All right.
But I went.
I'm interested in the shelf, and that's why I'm. You know,
it actually turned out
other stuff.
It actually turned out pretty cool. Actually turned out pretty good. I'll find a picture for you. It's good. Anyway, I did that, and then I sat down.
Do you have any problems finding studs?
No, I used drywall anchors, right? Cause the shelves, the braces that go on the wall are set. You can't like, so, okay, put this one in this stud and then clip it on. Like they're built onto the shelf itself. So I had to put drywall anchors on it. It was a whole process. It's a whole process. Fortunately, for me, obviously I am just the definition of a manly handyman. All right. No problem. I even put on a flannel shirt when I was doing it just so I
tool belt
had the vibe. No, because it was on top of my actual bar, so I had all my tools laid out there.
Ah,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, work smarter, not harder. I do have a tool belt. I've worn it. End of sentence. I've worn it is what I'm going to go with here. So I got that hung, and then I went and I sat down, and I started watching some sports on the television. And as I was watching the NLCS, I got a notification on my phone from one of the many sources that I get my sports news and information from. And it said, watch as Sidney Crosby chases history. And I was like, all right. So I fired up one of the bonus TVs in the Bro Cave and I put on Penguins Sabres. Now, outside of Sidney Crosby is an icon, I don't really have anything in me for the Penguins or the Sabres. And by the way, this is not a hockey story. This is a sports fan question that I'm coming to here in a minute. I don't really have any connection other than I've been watching Sidney Crosby, who was drafted to the Penguins the year after I graduated high school. I've been out of high school for 21 years now. Okay? This kid got drafted the year after I was out of high school. He's been in the league 20 years now. And he has been and continues to be very, very good in the National Hockey League. And what I have found, great one, is that as I approach the ripe old age of 40, coming up here in less than half a year, as I've approached the ripe old age of 40, I find myself appreciating more and more when I get the opportunity to watch legends at work, right? Whether it's Sidney Crosby or Patrick Mahomes.
I thought you were talking about me.
Well, obviously. Obviously, I share the stage every day, which is, you know, the universe's gift to radio, the great Malonzo. So, yes, watching legends work. It's like Sidney Crosby, Patrick Mahomes, Lonzo, LeBron James. Like, that's pretty much the list, right? The four horsemen of greatness right now. I find myself, as I approach 40, increasingly appreciative of the opportunity to watch these legends do legendary things. If you missed it, Sidney Crosby has joined the 1600 point club. It's a very short list. He is the first person to join the 1600 point club since Jaromir Jagr did it in 2011. Not another NHL player has done this thing in 13 seasons. Sid the Kid, or should I say Sid not a kid anymore, Crosby, because again, he's been in the league 20 years, did it last night. And I happened to tune in a handful of minutes before he hit that milestone. And I kind of started to think about all of the milestones that I've watched guys hit, right? Like when Drew Brees became the NFL's all-time passing yardage leader in a Saints game, God, however many years ago it was now, 200, I think it's been since we've been good. I was watching that game live, and I appreciated the hell out of it. It's like, man, I'm watching something that I'm sure it'll be broken at some point, right? I'm sure it'll be broken at some point. But I knew in that moment, especially when you have some connection to the player that did it, when you have some connection to the record breaker, to the person who is performing, when you have some connection to the guy that makes it, I think that for me anyway, it's easier to appreciate. But as I get older and I recognize more what I'm watching, it becomes more and more of a moment that, like, I feel like I'm actively committing it to memory versus, oh, there's a thing that's happened, that's nice. And like, now it's something that I'm like, yo, take this in, appreciate this. It might be another 13 years before anybody's able to do what Sid Crosby does. Guys that play 20 plus years, they don't last. There's not many of them, right? Like, they just, it's not a thing that happens very frequently. What is the way that you view when you watch somebody do the things, right? If Mahomes wins number three, if the Chiefs win number three this year, great one. You are going to see something that not only has, well, three in a row, that not only has no one ever done before, no team has done it before, but Mahomes could be the quarterback that does it first. To me, there is something as I get older, and I know I'm going full boomer radio here. There is something to me as I get older that makes me appreciate the things I'm seeing more. Watching Ronald Acuna last year go 40-70 club, I took in every time he took off to go to second with the steal. Watching Shohei join the 50-50 club this year, very few guys can accomplish that. I took in watching one of the greatest to ever hold a baseball bat and Shohei Ohtani do what he did. As I get older, I just appreciate these things more.
See, I'm not sure it's an age thing. I think it may be a perspective thing because I've always been, you know, I don't like during Sosa and McGuire. You know, I'm not a baseball guy, but I tuned in every time they showed up because I wanted to see history made. Anytime history is being made, you want to watch it. If you can see it in person, it's even better. But yeah, I mean, it's really cool to go or to realize I just saw something that hasn't been done before.
I agree. I do think it is at least to some degree an age thing. I do because, you know, I –
There are some really mature younger people who are in the moment and understand that they're in the moment.
I don't disagree, but I also think they're the exception, not the rule. And I can say that because a long time ago, I was a younger person. And maybe it is just me. Maybe I'm putting my own biases on everybody else. But I was a younger person. And even as a younger person, I don't think, even as a lover of baseball, football, soccer, hockey, whatever, I don't think I necessarily had the appreciation for what I was watching that I do now. And I think maybe it's because, especially now, like the rate at which athletes are improving, and I'm talking about getting faster, bigger, stronger, more athletic year after year after year, it's like it kind of feels now like whatever's being done, it just feels inevitably it's going to be topped, right? We had this conversation earlier in the week when Jason Kelce said he wants kickers out of the NFL because we got kickers now that routinely hit 60-yarders. I remember back in the day, there was one game specifically where Jason Elam...
Except for Monday night.
Yeah, right. I remember back in the day when Jason Elam would set up for a 61-yarder for the Broncos, and they cut into that, right? Like, they took you away from a game. They said, all right, we're going to come back to the action, but we're going to send you live now to Denver, Colorado, where Broncos kicker Jason Elam is setting up for a 63-yard field goal. And they were talking about Tom Dempsey, who still had the record from like the 70s at 61 with that blocked foot he had, right? And now we got that kid down in Dallas, Texas, that's hitting like multiple 60-yarders a game. If Dallas gets the ball across the 40 going in, it's points for them. That's how ridiculous it is. So I think that...
It's not really helping them win games, though, is it?
No, it's not. But hey, at least we got a good kicker, right, Jarrah? So I think that part of the reason that the appreciation for stellar athletes doing tremendously athletic things is the fact that it almost feels like inevitably within a year or two, that's going to be a common thing, right? Think about NBA dunks. Years ago, just a dunk was impressive. Now, if a guy jumps up and dunks, you're like, all right, bro. Like, yeah, that's it. Now, if you want to blow people away, you got to dunk over a 7-footer or you got to do a trick or whatever it is. And then they get more complicated, more impressive every year. I'm watching guys in the dunk contest that go up and do dunks that, like, you know, they look like a video game character. And I come in here the next day and people go, dunk contest was boring. Are you kidding me? That guy hit his head on the rim. That's insane. I think the appreciation... is it there the way it used to be? Because it just feels like anything that one guy can do today, next year, everybody's going to be able to do that thing. The innovation in the athletic prowess increases every year. But I will also say now that, like, as I get older, and when somebody says, Sid the Kid Crosby is about to break a mark that nobody has broken since Yarmir did it 13 years ago, I stopped watching baseball to clock in on that because I'm like, this is a moment. This is history. This is something hockey people are going to be talking about for a very long time. I can't not watch this. I have to see this. I have to be a part of this. And I don't know that I would have done that 10, 15 years ago. I don't know if this is me facing my sports fan mortality. That there, if I'm lucky, there may be... maybe two or three more players that reach 1,600 points before I kick the bucket. Like, maybe there's two or three more. I got a chance to see one do it last night. I don't know. I in the moment last night as I was watching a little bit of Penguins Sabres, I just had this moment where I'm like, I got to start being more appreciative about this stuff. I got to be more appreciative about the opportunity to have this memory. I got to be more appreciative about the opportunity a handful of years from now to be able to say, yeah, I was watching the night Sid the Kid Crosby join the 1,600-point club. And hopefully before the end of the year to join the 1,700-point club, a club that's even more elite. I don't know. It's just important to me. Texas said, Rob, in my lifetime, I grew up with Wayne Gretzky, Nolan Ryan, Michael Jordan, Dan Marino, Joe Montana, Troy Aikman, Cowboys. Each of them did amazing things when I was younger. Yeah, I mean, there's still... guys like that that transcend. I'm wearing a Michael Jordan jersey right now. Because even as a kid, I knew how good this guy was. Did I know how good David Robinson was? Did I know how good Charles Barkley was? Did I know how good Akeem Olajuwon was? Right? You see what I'm saying? Like, there's a difference between Mike and then appreciating the greats that were in that league that were overshadowed by him. I don't know if I did. I do now. Do you? Do you have that appreciation for those caliber guys? Lulu Kessin joins the show to talk Gamecock football. When we come back, before we do that, Lonzo enlightens, entertains, enthralls you with his sports flash.
I don't know about enthralling. That's illegal, I believe. L.A. Dodgers shut out the New York Mets in Game 3 of the NLCS 8-0 last night. Walker Buehler made his first playoff start in years, going four innings and giving up only three hits and no runs. The Dodgers had 10 hits on the night, including home runs from Enrique Hernandez, Max Muncy, and Shohei Ohtani. Days after Oregon head coach Dan Lanning capitalized on a rule that allowed him to have an extra defender on the field at the cost of only 5 yards and, you know, helped him beat Ohio State, the NCAA has closed that loophole yesterday. The organization announced that if a defense has 12 defenders inside the final 2 minutes, the offense may not elect to reset or the clock to where it was when the play began, or they may elect, I believe. Tune in tomorrow at 7 p.m. as the Burns Rebels head to Eastside to take on the Eagles. It's Burns versus Eastside on the Fan Upstate.